Our scientific knowledge is, oh my God. Guten Tag. Welcome to the Co-Conspirators Podcast. I'm your host, Luke, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Callum
Hello there.
and John.
Hello.
With the news last week that our podcast peaked at number three in the German comedy fiction podcast charts, we just want to say a massive danke to everyone who has supported us. We appreciate every one of you. If you enjoy the podcast and want to show support, we recommend dropping us a review on Apple Podcasts or subscribing to our YouTube channel. We're aiming to hit 100 subs by my birthday in mid-October. Both go a long way to helping us out massively. Anyway, in today's episode, we are going to be delving into the world of science and having a look at some science-related conspiracies, although we will be saving flat Earth and global warming for another day. Our scientific knowledge as a society has grown massively in the last few centuries. Some of our ancestors lived not knowing answers to basic questions and had no idea about the world as a whole. You can imagine in 1776, it took months for news to reach home that the British had lost in the American War of Independence. Whereas today, we can find out in a fraction of seconds that the Kansas City Chiefs have bagged a touchdown against the New England Patriots. Likewise, rather fittingly, in 1968, when Hong Kong flu spread around the world, killing 4 million people and making half of France's entire workforce bedridden, a vaccine was made in 4 months, as there was no need for the intensive trials and safety precautions we take today. Our knowledge continues to grow exponentially today. Just last week, there was talk of life potentially living in the Venus clouds, when it was previously believed only a hospitable environment like Earth could harbor life.
I suppose a little counterpoint to that, you could argue that society is getting less intelligent, maybe more scientifically advanced, but less intelligent as more and more things become automated thanks to our scientific advancements.
True. I think as well, you got to think like maybe 500 years ago, there's I don't really know the numbers. Maybe like 1 billion people on Earth, and now there's 7.5 billion. So you're more likely to have like an idiot living on the planet. There's more of them out there, and you kind of have access to them because you can see them on the internet.
People are getting more contrarian as well, I think, which can seem counterintelligent. Whether or not it is a story for another day, like things like Flat Earth.
Yeah, plus the internet gives these people a place to reside, spread their ideas, and sort of like almost artificially increase the actual impact or the number of people who actually think these things, especially when it comes to like anti-vax and stuff. So imagine it's a very small minority in the grand scheme of the entire population of the Earth generally think vaccines cause autism.
Yeah, I guess as well, like science being the answer to everything can kind of slow down innovation in a way, just because like people just believe everything they're told, so they don't kind of look at solutions themselves. Science has an answer for most things, but often can be wrong when later discoveries are made. Take the thalidomide crisis, for example, where thousands of children were born with defects thanks to a trusted drug. Science is generally trusted by most and is often believed to be the definitive answer. It can even win wars. But like anything so important, it is not free from conspiracy. As science is such a broad topic, it covers so many aspects, from coronavirus being man-made in a lab to Josef Mengele replicating twins at an alarming rate in Argentina. We have reviewed some of the less believable and some of the more known but still interesting science conspiracies. Well, today we have three more for you, so buckle into our flux capacitor power show and enjoy your pack of popcorn, which is probably made with around 48 different chemicals. And yeah, let's jump in. Callum, I think you've got a conspiracy for us.
I have indeed. I say maybe less of a conspiracy, more just a general commentary on the nature of conspiracies with my, or sort of call it a theory, with my offering today. I'm going to take a slight detour from the path most trodden on this podcast by offering a bit of a meta commentary on the concept of conspiracy theories and why certain people may or may not be more inclined to believe them. But nevertheless, you could still consider this as a conspiracy theory, depending on how highly you regard the science or pseudoscience of psychology. Can you really derive empirical data from thoughts, feelings, and opinions? That's what we might be trying to answer with this one. You could also take things deeper, perhaps playing into the nature of the research by suggesting that these findings are designed to paint conspiracy theorists as irrational and manipulative, further increasing the divide between the so-called believers and non-believers.
This is Justin Bieber.
We have actually mentioned it on the podcast, the whole hat TikTok debacle with
Oh,
the.
yeah.
There's quite a big conspiracy about one of his videos and Pizzagate, I think, but I haven't really looked too much into it.
I think the hat was also that the hat was in
Yeah.
reference to Pizzagate as well.
Yeah, it's one of them where it just wouldn't surprise you, but I mean, it's probably a low believability.
I thought Pizzagate was as good as fact now. I didn't really think it was a conspiracy anymore.
Are
I
you
don't
on
know.
about?
We may have to do an episode on it.
You're not on about Prince Andrew, are you?
Well, he's involved in it, I
All
think.
right.
So maybe the Woking Pizza Express has more of a meaning than we thought.
No. Not that specific pizza.
That's what I thought you thought for a second.
No.
I suppose this could still be considered a little bit topical to mine, seeing the far-fetched theories that some people believe and how likely you are to believe that these theories is based on apparently some of your personality traits, according to the research I've read.
Some people just like to disagree, don't they? And whereas some people just like to believe what they're told and they're happy to just live life being told what to do, I guess.
Also, quite interestingly, some of these articles that I read relating to this topic all seem to reference the Las Vegas shooting in 2017, which is like specifically the theory that alleged that there were multiple shoots and the whole incident was manufactured to tighten gun laws in America. Seemed like a bit of a trigger to really try
trigger.
Oh, yeah, well, really drive the wedge between conspiracy theorists and the rational-minded, as people like to think.
I do think there's a lot of people, because my opinion on it as a whole is, I don't necessarily believe some of the more far-fetched ones, but I just find it interesting to hear them. I find them entertaining, kind of a lot of the reason for doing this podcast. And it's just entertaining to hear other people's points of view, and it makes you think. So I think that's a lot of the appeal of them.
Yeah, absolutely. You just almost like foreshadowed my question. I was just about to ask you, so what draws you to conspiracy theories? Oh my God, they jumped the gun, to use another dark words there. But yeah, what about you, Luke? You sort of got similar, similar appeal for the conspiracies on given we do this podcast now?
For sure. I think most people will find them entertaining. Like, even if you think it's a bit stupid, like, it's still pretty entertaining to think that someone believes this kind of stuff. But then some of them are definitely believable and kind of have to have a second thought that maybe we shouldn't really be believing everything we hear. On top of that, some of them you kind of just like, you want to be true. We've mentioned dinosaurs and aliens. Like, you read them, you're like, oh, please, can this just be true? Like, can I find out in like 2 years' time that this is the truth?
Yeah, I suppose well, especially on this podcast, the ones that we want to believe, the ones that don't have any like major political ramifications, are just really interesting and wacky and just out there. But a bit more of the disparity comes when you are dealing with more politically motivated ones, especially with how highly charged politics is in today's society. But I'll do my best to keep things as lighthearted as possible as part of this theory and avoid any deep psychoanalysis that exposes any of our deeper layers of both mine and my co-host's subconsciouses. But it is certainly worth trying to dig into some of these impulses and what really does make a conspiracist tick. So basically, as we've alluded to, science would argue that to some extent that the human brain is wired to find conspiracy theories appealing. So that people are highly evolved when it comes to the ability to draw conclusions and predict consequences based on sensory data and observation. But sometimes those same processes can lead to oversimplifications and misperception through what psychologists refer to as cognitive bias.
I think that's a very true thing. Like, you believe what you want to believe because it's nice and it just makes you happier.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe not you're aware you're doing it. Something I've found myself like slightly falling into the trap when I've been doing my research for other episodes. That, yeah, I'll just pile on all of the points that support this conspiracy theory. Then I'll forget. Yeah, I've got to offer some counterpoints here to try and keep things objective.
I mean, it's always the case. Like, sometimes I feel like my beliefs are quite irrational, and then I'll believe it strongly. I'll find out like some points to back me up, and then if anyone has any counterpoints, I'm just like, nah, it doesn't count.
It's just sort of trying to maintain, especially on this podcast, we do just offer a commentary on the conspiracies. We're not advocating for any of them. As much as we say we wish some of them would happen, for the most more serious ones, we're just offering what is out there, and just, we'll make our mind up through the believability, but that's as far as it goes.
Yeah, again, it's just for entertainment. It's not to try and change anyone's mind particularly, just to maybe get you thinking. Offer a point of view you may not have otherwise heard, and then make your own mind up.
Yeah, that's very well put there. It is very interesting. As we say, we are drawn to the unknown and what isn't entirely explained to us. You can't have everything spoon-fed to you. Sometimes you have to go and make your own minds up. Whether that be through conspiracy theories or not, I guess that's how your brain chemistry, what that dictates. So as several psychologists have identified, there are specific characteristics that strongly correlate with a proclivity to believe conspiracy theories. A 2017 study by Lanchon and colleagues, personality traits such as openness to experience, distrust, low agreeability, and Machiavellianism are associated with conspiracy belief. Just briefly, Machiavellianism describes an individual so focused on their own interests that they will manipulate, deceive, and exploit others to achieve their goals.
I was going to say, it sounds like a politician.
It was actually derived from an Italian politician. I can't remember the exact era, but I think you have hit the nail on the head there.
Machiavelli.
That's the one.
How have you worked that one out?
Yeah, I know.
Was that foreknowledge or was that just a bit of critical thinking?
It was me being aware of him and then hearing the word. Putting two and two together.
So, along with psychopathy and narcissism, Machiavellianism forms one third of a psychological grouping known as a dark triad, a trio of malevolent personality traits. but the majority of the aforementioned traits draw many negative connotations just by themselves, which could be interpreted as disparaging those who choose to become immersed in the world of conspiracy theories. Again, theorists may perceive this as a form of ad hominem attack, where their critics are unable to disprove the information contained within the conspiracy, to have to resort to criticism of their character. Therefore, engaging with conspiracists in this way can be counterintuitive and cause them to double down on their arguments without critically evaluating the information within the conspiracy theory.
I think that's the case with everyone. I feel like if you have an argument, it's just so pointless because you never really take a second to appreciate what the other person's saying and weigh it up. It's all guns blazing on your side, really. You just carry on no matter what.
It takes a very bold person to actually fully admit they're wrong, open and listen to the other person's view. That's why I can explain again back to politics, but it's why it's so divisive and into the society we live in. Perhaps unsurprisingly, Lanchon concluded that people with stronger conspiracy beliefs are more likely to overestimate the likelihood of co-occurring events, to attribute intentionality where it is unlikely to exist, and have lower levels of analytical thinking. As we've demonstrated on numerous occasions through these podcasts, coincidence is integral to formulating a good conspiracy theory, whether it be from the entertainment angle that we take, right up to the most die-hard tinfoil hat wearers. These can be the observations that make or break conspiracy theories, as correlation without causation can cause a theory to fall down. But I suppose as for a lack of analytical thinking amongst conspiracy theorists, critical thinking can also highlight flaws in official stories. While it can be impossible to predict some of the phenomena that occur in groundbreaking events such as 9/11, considering the findings revealed in Operation Northwoods, as John alluded to on an earlier episode, the US government's false flag terror operation in the 1960s should definitely open people's eyes to extreme lengths some governments have been willing to go to in order to achieve their objectives. Researchers also linked individuals' need for uniqueness with a heightened likelihood to believe in conspiracy theories, claiming that they represent the possession of unconventional and potentially scarce information. So again, this goes back to that argument, point where no one wants to admit they're wrong if they believe they hold unique information. They believe their information is better because they believe in it. It's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy. It can lead to feelings of importance and superiority.
I think this guy already doesn't like conspiracy theorists.
That's what I'm thinking. Conspiracy in of itself, he's just saying all this to discredit him.
To be fair, I think the analytical thinking one's definitely harsh. I think if you look at some of the conspiracies, they're incredibly analytical. I mean, in some instances, creative. But you know, they've put two and two together, and some of the analysis there, you could argue, is like high level scientific stuff, especially with some of the, you know, 9/11 stuff John has touched on. It goes very far in depth.
Yeah, to actually have a compelling conspiracy theory, you do have to have definitely have a level of evaluation and analysis in there. Otherwise, you're just saying something completely ridiculous. And the more thought you give it, the likelihood you can ground it in some more evidence, whether that be coincidental or entirely plausible, is another matter. But to say conspiracy theorists have no critical thinking whatsoever is quite disparaging. It just sort of fuel the little argument that I introduced at the start. So maybe this is intended to just completely ostracize conspiracy theorists and allow more heinous forces to work and push the boundaries further with their waves of just drones who believe exactly what they're told on the news.
You're more likely to have analysed the initial event as well. Most people won't bother. You hear something's happened and you take it as read. Whereas, you know, the conspiracy types have analysed it clearly and thought, well, something doesn't look right. So if anything, you could make the case they're more analytical by nature of being more challenging and less agreeable.
Exactly. I suppose it is difficult to come up with counterpoint to this argument from the point of view that who doesn't get a sense of superiority or smugness when they think they know something that no one else does? You know, say when you think back to the school days, everyone's struggling over a problem, you're sitting there knowing, I've got the answer.
It's even better when you're in the know for a Wigan transfer, isn't it?
Yeah, or a Wigan transfer out, I think, in the case at the moment. It's told down the river by the administrators. Although there could be plenty of conspiracies about Wigan given the whole takeover, but we'll save those for the next football one. And those will definitely be conspiracy theories, as I firmly believe. Yeah. On a slightly darker note, Chichoka and colleagues reported that paranoid thought mediates the relationship between individual narcissism and conspiracy beliefs. So where might that paranoia be coming from? Many anti-conspiracy theorists are sure to be fans of the psychologist Richard Moulding, whose 2016 research asserted that those who believe in conspiracies are more likely to be alienated and socially isolated. In the words of Brie Larson, is that like a personal attack? Jokes aside, though, it has been noted that individuals who endorse conspiracy theorists are likely to be higher in powerlessness, social isolation, and anomia, broadly defined as a subjective disengagement from social norms.
Social isolation.
Yes.
That explains why coronavirus conspiracies are top of the range.
It's a prime breeding ground.
It is, yeah.
But at the same time, though, this does basically double down on the point that you raised a little bit earlier about how this seems to be very, very anti-conspiracy theories, just presenting one side of the argument, then to double down and call them social loners, essentially, and say they're suffering from alienation, which is why they're turning to conspiracy theories, to make up for their lack of socialized interaction. It's a very one-sided approach, I'll say that much.
Yeah, I think, is this a psychological paper?
Yeah.
I think everything with psychological papers is pretty much always subjective. There's no kind of statistics or evidence backing them up. Who are they basing it on when they're like, oh, you know, conspiracy theorists are rubbish at analysis? Like,
I think it's just, well, from my limited knowledge on psychology, the way they conduct studies is just questionnaires, interviews, things like that, where it is all just, you've got to work with words rather than facts and figures, which can offer you some more concrete solutions. I suppose you could draw some correlations here or there, like I've done in this paper, but still, it does depend on sample size and everything like that. And it is quite easy to draw these almost false conclusions based on being selectively biased in your sample. If you find people are interested in conspiracy theories, take the most ardent, well, I suppose unhinged almost, members of conspiracy theory forums, the ones who believe the most out there stuff, with them, and you might be likely to find that they could be a little bit more socially isolated, a bit more alienated than your average listener of the Co-Conspirators podcast, who I'm sure is an upstanding member of society.
Of course.
Damn right.
Just like ourselves, coronavirus or not. But just linking back to the paranoia, Moulding also argues that people who feel powerless may also endorse conspiracy theories as they help the individual avoid blame for their predicament. So in this sense, conspiracy theories would give a sense of meaning, security and control over an unpredictable and dangerous world. And one thing there is no doubting that, I suppose, the internet has given birth to a wealth of subcultures, allowing many like-minded individuals a space to gather and communicate where previously they wouldn't have had such a forum, which of course then leads to echo chambers where theories aren't subject to robust scrutiny, leaving them maybe floundering when they try to present this to the public and notice, of course, I've told it. I suppose it's something we touched on earlier in an earlier episode, that even conspiracy theorists are concerned about the more fringe members with their less believable ideas, discrediting the conspiracy theory movement as a whole when there could be some legitimate research pushed about certain key events.
Well, yeah, I think if you believe in a conspiracy theory, you're put under this huge banner of being a conspiracy theorist when there's such a huge range of people within that group, many of which won't believe the vast majority of the more, you know, wacky ones, but they've done some real research, or they believe one that's a lot more believable, but they tend to just be written off as, oh, yeah, you're just one of those conspiracists, you talking a load of rubbish, which isn't really fair a lot of the time.
Absolutely. So me talking about Project Serpa and the fact that the US may have sent 12 people to the Zeta Reticuli system in the 1960s is definitely not the same as someone actually getting to grips with actually Project Northwood, which has now been proven as not a conspiracy theory. That it's not a conspiracy theory anymore.
It's been shown in
official government document. There is such a broad spectrum that sort of like using broad strokes some of these papers seem to have done is quite counterintuitive for the narrative as a whole. So I'll sort of round things up here by just saying, is it right to call all conspiracy theorists basement-dwelling recluses that score highly great narcissism, distrust and Machiavellianism? Is daring to question the official narrative enough to be branded a manipulative charlatan whose sole aim is to disparage the trustworthy and upstanding news media? One final study published in the Columbia News Journal stated that greater knowledge about the news media, not beliefs, but knowledge of basic facts of structure, content and effect, is associated with less likelihood of succumbing to conspiracy theorists, even ones that may suit one's held views. So given that this was published in a news and journalism publication, the phrase positive publication bias does spring to mind. And I don't think criticising the news media is likely to win you any spots in their articles. But as we've been alluding to throughout this little thread, having such an unwavering faith in the media's ability to report objectively could be just as dangerous as believing every conspiracy theory that you come across. Like critical thinking works both ways, as we've covered on several of our episodes, where conspiracies have been turned out to be true. And not to mention the numerous scandals that the news media have been involved with, not just in here in the UK, but across the world. So obviously on this podcast, we do take more of an explorative view, offering our insights on a range of conspiracies without directly endorsing any of them. But exploring every conspiracy with an entirely closed mind is definitely counterintuitive, not just this podcast. So I'll throw it over to you guys. Do you agree with the psychology behind one's propensity to believe in conspiracy theories? Or is it just part of a wider conspiracy to further alienate those would-be conspiracists, giving the powers that be more control over their citizens with even less scrutiny?
I think with some aspects, you could argue that it's quite true. I mean, I think people do like uniqueness. People like to disagree and stuff like that. Whether that makes you more likely to believe in conspiracies, I don't know. But I feel like in some way, everyone believes some kind of conspiracy, even if it's just like a small one. I don't think everyone like sits down and believes everything they hear. I just don't think that happens. And also, technically, if you believe like one media source, technically you disagree with another media source, because quite often they're quite conflicting. And I urge anyone listening to check out the Global Times. It's a English language Chinese news source, and it's literally just a conspiracy heaven. It's just full of what we would call conspiracies, basically. It's quite funny to read. It's like actually what their news is, so you could argue that they're all conspiracists to the West and we're all conspiracists to them in some kind of way.
I thought you were about to recommend an objective, fact-driven publication. Both sides of the argument allowed you to make it your own mind.
No. That's objective like that.
Not like the Fox News and CNN derby going on across the pond.
I think it's definitely a bit harsh. And, you know, you have these intellectuals that they're a bit up themselves. They also can't see both sides of the story. So, you know, there is this unfair reputation that, like, if you believe this, then, you know, you're an absolute lunatic. Whereas a lot of people who claim to be conspiracists do a lot of research and base what they believe on a lot of facts, and then obviously don't believe the stupid, crazy stuff that sometimes we report, and it's just out there on the internet.
Exactly. The internet really is a crazy place, and it is quite easy to just look down your nose at people, and you see them as almost statistics rather than actual individual cases with their own experiences and uniqueness, no matter how negative you try to paint that in your studies.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is, I'll just take like America as an example. Like, you've got a set of people who would support Obama, a set of people who would support Trump. If Obama says something and people disagree, the Obama supporters are like, oh, you're a conspiracist. But now Trump's in power, like, they disagree with everything he's saying. And I mean, they're not really classified as conspiracists. So I guess it is to suit your own agenda, I guess.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's definitely interesting, and I would like to kind of delve deeper into this topic and have a bit of a look myself. I'm intrigued in a way to see if there's any kind of positivity that anyone's ever written about in terms of this, because although you do kind of to the side of the lunatics when you think about conspiracy theorists, there'll be some interesting studies into kind of like the more, you know, research driven conspiracies and what kind of people do that, and, you know, definitely want to see that. But it's definitely got us talking, and I think it's raised some very interesting points, so I'm going to score an 8 out of 10.
What about you, John?
So I think on the subject of the paper, I think it started off being reasonably down the middle, and it made sense. I think, you know, it's natural that people who believe conspiracies are going to score lower on agreeableness and things like that. So I think it perhaps initially came from a place of reason and some sort of scientific basis. I then think it got a bit more opinion driven. And I think, kind of on the subject of dismissing all conspiracy theories, I think it isn't helpful to either side, really, because you have people like Neil deGrasse Tyson, who's clearly a very intelligent guy and he knows his physics, but I think his manner is basically anyone who's a flat earther, anyone who doesn't absolutely believe the moon landings, is an absolute kind of mouth-breathing idiot that doesn't deserve the time of day. And it's not a very helpful way of looking at it, because you're just going to make them solidify their viewpoint even more so, because they're going to dislike you as a person, which is, it's kind of like what Jordan Peterson has talked about with Donald Trump, basically saying how people who don't vote Trump look down their noses at those that do, but you're never going to get anywhere by doing that, because no one's going to change their mind. There's never going to be any kind of reasoned or rational debate. So yeah, I think a paper like that kind of showed its bias wasn't particularly useful by the end of it. But it's certainly interesting that there is some sort of science and human nature behind conspiracy theories. So I think in terms of that part of the paper, I'm going to give it a 7.5 out of 10. In terms of the paper as a whole, I might drop it to a 5. I'm middling on it a bit.
Did you actually read this paper?
I read the abstract. I couldn't get access to it.
I don't blame you. I mean, I've never read a psychological paper, but papers that we had to read at university, oh my God. Send you to sleep. That'd be a 10 out of 10 for effort if you actually read an academic paper.
Yeah. Of course, I found several articles all seem to reference this paper, which has made my life a bit easier.
Yeah.
Like I said, I've read many a paper in my time, and it can be a chore to get through if you're not fully engaged. And the moment you find they start calling you an idiot and disagreeable and a social isolationist or what have you, for merely entertaining the idea of conspiracy theories will just turn you off even more. So. Yeah, we've all showed here, we can demonstrate a lot of critical analysis. We've pulled apart the paper a bit, found some flaws, and they all seem to have done a poorer job of remaining objective than maybe some conspiracy theorists. given the obvious bias against them, given it's maybe arisen from the post-Las Vegas shooting America, which conspiracy theorists ran riots with. But yeah, as like John was saying, I suppose in today's age when people have such massive platforms and Twitter online and stuff, and you can just call anyone who disagrees with you a mouth-breathing idiot, for want of a better term, it just, well, ruins discourse, like constructive discourse, especially when you can just drop a 10-word Twitter clapback, get thousands of retweets, and the person you're arguing with just doubles down and goes back into their shell of conspiracy theory ideas, and no one really gets anything out of it. No one's changed them. No one's had their minds opened. Both people going away thinking, oh yeah, I won that one. He disagreed with me. That means I'm clearly right. And you don't get anywhere. So it's not the most effective way of dealing with conspiracy theorists in an age where more and more conspiracy theorists seem to be springing. You know, so they say don't get to start on the latest wave of coronavirus conspiracies, given we've done two podcasts on the topic already. But whenever there's a world event, it seems to be a breeding ground. It's not going to go away. I think for that reason, we've got to entertain it more, maybe be a bit more open-minded.
You missed a trick by not saying second wave of coronavirus.
I don't even want to even entertain the idea of a second wave, even though it's happening before our eyes. But yes, if I was going to rate it, I think it was certainly an eye-opener to see, not how the other side think, just to see the academic view of conspiracy theorists, which all seems to be heavily weighted in the camp that they're all deranged lunatics. And nothing they should be say should ever be believed. And if you believe exactly what the news media is telling you, you're an upstanding citizen. You're a model of what we want you to think. And that could almost be considered social engineering in itself. But I'll give it an 8 out of 10 overall. And it's not going to stop us doing this podcast, that's for sure. And now after that discussion, I think we'll throw it over to Luke now to get us back on track with the usual conspiracy theory format.
Yeah, thanks to Callum. It was nice to have a change, and it was definitely an interesting presentation there. I think if we can find more stuff like that in the future, it's nice to mix it up every now and then. But yeah, back to the kind of conspiracies. So you've heard the science, so here's the science conspiracy. The theory that I'm presenting is that the Mandela effect has arisen as a result of the Large Hadron Collider. And this is quite an in-depth, unknown conspiracy that has been inspired and compiled by Nick Hinton. So thanks to him for this fascinating take. I'm assuming you both know what the Mandela effect is.
I've got a general idea. I've never had it fully explained to me. So maybe a little brief definition would be appreciated.
Sure, yeah. For anyone else like Callum who doesn't know it too well, it's basically where people commonly believe something about the past, but then turns out it was completely wrong. For example, the famous example is Nelson Mandela died in the prison in the 80s, and then people were surprised to find out that he was still alive in the 2000s. Other common examples include Luke, I am your father from Star Wars, Mickey Mouse's outfit, and John breaking a Bulgarian door handle.
That is a definite Mandela effect. Not so, hey, Luke, I am your father. That is one close to mine in John's heart.
I don't know if you know any other examples, John. There's quite a few out there. They're all a bit niche and small, but
I think one of them's the Monopoly Man. He doesn't have a monocle, but everyone thinks he does.
Yeah, I think a lot of them are often common misconceptions. But the idea behind the Mandela effect is it's not, in fact, a common misconception, but instead instances where different universes and timelines are switched and messed up, resulting in people moving into different timelines. The thing with this is I think there'd be way more instances of this effect if this was the case. Like, if you switch timeline, all of a sudden, like, maybe the Second World War never happened. Or something weird like Wigan Athletic winning the FA Cup in 2013 would have happened.
wait, what? That didn't happen?
I kind of expect our entire history being different because of, you know, the butterfly effect if we switch timelines. Like, if Mandela had died in our timeline in the 80s and we switched to a timeline where he didn't die, you'd expect a lot of things to be different and it'd be very noticeable.
So it's like the infinite universes theory, is that theory? Something like that, where there's an infinite number of events occurring, every single possible occurrence for every single action is happening somewhere in some timeline.
Kind of ties into this in a way.
That's actually a scientific one, though, more than a conspiracy. There's genuine scientists who believe that to be the case. I mean, I find it a bit preposterous, but then again, I'm not a scientist.
And there's also those early monkey and typewriters analogy that perplexed many a scientific mind.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a concept of infinite, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just guaranteed to happen. Yeah, a bit more about the theory and a bit of intro to the Large Hadron Collider at CERN, which is the European Organization for Nuclear Research. It's a massive laboratory, and you guessed it, it's in Switzerland.
Oh, no, here we go.
I mean, sadly, we still have no podcast players in Switzerland, but we would like to welcome our new countries, Finland, Mexico, Oman and Bulgaria.
Here after the door handle incident, no doubt.
The facility is famous for being home to the world's largest particle collider and discovering the legendary Higgs boson, which is nicknamed as the God Particle, in the summer of 2012. Now, a particle collider is a machine that uses extremely powerful magnetic fields to shoot beams of subatomic particles at each other. These beams travel at nearly the speed of light, and when they collide, scientists are able to see what the universe looked like right after the Big Bang. Now, many might remember how there was a small chance this whole experiment could create a black hole and end the universe. It's actually Stephen Hawking himself who came out and said this. It's a pretty much a classic Swiss move, an unnecessary experiment that could end the world. I mean, if someone told me drinking my morning coffee had a 1 in 16 trillion chance the world would end up, I'd probably switch to a nice English breakfast tea.
Don't worry, the Mandela effect will be there to transport us to a different timeline and everything will be fine.
That's a dream. Technically speaking, I don't know. This is just coming out of my head. This is probably not scientifically true. Like, inside a black hole, do we know what happens? Like, you could be traveling faster than the speed of light and then time travel. And then, yeah, you go, Mandela effect.
I suppose as far as we're aware, no one knows exactly what goes on due to the fact that anything that enters there is just destroyed. I'm not sure exactly how. It could be a wormhole, could be traveling as fast as the speed of light, etc.
Well, time bends around black holes because they're so dense or something.
Mm.
Matter bends. So around the edge of one, I think time and that does get very messed up. So you never know.
Wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
Now, some conspiracists argued that CERN are really trying to create the portal to the underworld. This does sound ridiculous, but even the official CERN website says they are looking for dark matter and other dimensions.
I don't know if you're going to mention this, but you just said the underworld then has reminded me. I'm sure there's some weird like statue outside it. Some,
yeah.
Like, satanic statue outside it.
Yeah, you're correct. I was going to go into that a bit later on, but basically there's a statue of Shiva. And what's kind of funny is when the conspiracy theory surrounding CERN came out, the scientists at CERN kind of, as a Mickey take, like filmed themselves like doing a satanic ritual around the around the thing just to wind everyone up a bit.
In plain sight.
It's there. I don't know why it's there. I don't know if there's a logical explanation why they have this specific statue outside.
Well, it's clear so they could perform their satanic rituals.
Yeah,
and
we've just told you.
Now the conspiracy theories out there, they could do it in full view, knowing that everyone out there is thinking they're taking the mic, because they've got no time to worry about secrecy anymore.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, it's quite a ridiculous theory. They're building a portal to the underworld, and kind of ties in a way to the science of conspiracies Callum mentioned. Other conspiracists argue, and this is maybe a bit more believable, that CERN is messing with time and changing our past. Maybe not more believable, but you know, it just shows that conspiracists differ on what they believe anyway. Now, we do know that if you can travel faster than the speed of light, you will technically time travel. However, it is vastly believed that nothing can travel faster than the speed of light. Now, I don't know about you two, but I actually remember in 2011, CERN discovered a particle that could travel faster than the speed of light. This was a time we were doing science in school, and it was brought up in one of our physics lessons. I actually remember that quite clearly.
I do. Good job you do, because I don't at all.
I was going to say, I'm not sure whether I only vaguely remember it because you just said it.
Of course, this would be huge. Physics would be rewritten, and a lot of what we believe changed. I mean, it's been believed so vividly that nothing can travel faster than the speed of light. However, the claim was supposedly debunked, and the scientist who announced the discovery was forced to resign. This caused a lot of controversy in the physics community and has been a topic of heated debate ever since. For such a humongous discovery, it has certainly been swept under the rug in recent years. I didn't actually type this into the internet, but I don't know if there's still articles about it, because I do remember this on the news when they found this particle that could supposedly go faster than the speed of light. But I do remember our physics teacher also saying it was being analysed and was up for debate, so there's that as well.
I've just looked it up now. It's a tachyon, or a tachyonic particle. It's a hypothetical particle that always travels faster than light. It's an Italian experiment that unveiled evidence of fundamental particles known as neutrinos can travel faster than light.
There we go.
Apparently, they tried to fire a particle of 730 kilometers. They found that it went a nanosecond faster than it would have traveling at light speed, this particle. But then they found it's a loose fiber optic cable had introduced a delay in the timing system.
Just imagine a guy with a stopwatch getting it wrong by a nanosecond.
He's just standing there waiting for it to come.
The reaction. Bang.
Human error. Anyway, but it's supposedly it was meant to have traveled 0.002% faster than light, but they got it wrong.
I mean, it does make sense if they discovered this particle that traveled faster than the speed of light, they would want to announce they would do so. However, when such serious side effects, going back to the Mandela effect, like Curious George's tail not existing and Pikachu not having a black stripe on his tail occurred, it's no surprise they wanted to cover it up. But in all seriousness, travel faster than the speed of light is likely to have some consequences, so it wouldn't surprise me if they wanted to cover it up if they discovered these. Adding weight to this, CERN openly talks about working with D-Wave Systems, a quantum computing company that claims its machines work by collaborating with parallel universes, which kind of ties in with what John said. There is kind of scientific backing to this whole, you know, infinite universes theory. And as mentioned, CERN not only mocked conspiracists with their satanic dance, they also mocked them by releasing a video where staff wore a top saying, Bond 1 Mandela. The first Bond, if you include Casino Royale in 1954, was Barry Nelson. Therefore, the top kind of, in a weird way, spelled out Nelson Mandela.
That's the weirdest way of trolling anyone anyway. Like, I mean, cryptic t-shirt.
It's cryptic, but it had Mandela on the second t-shirt, so it's like kind of obvious in a way. They're definitely wind-up merchants at CERN, put it that way. It's the Swiss man, tell you. And a bit more into this theory, CERN also created the World Wide Web. It was Sir Tim Berners-Lee when he was working for CERN. And some say the real reason for it is to gather as much data about the world as possible. The data could be put into advanced computers to create simulations of the future. Once future events are predicted, scientists could act accordingly. Advanced simulations could also tell them what little changes in history would create drastic changes in the present. CERN really is capable of a faster than the speed of light particle, and it could technically be capable of time travel. They could theoretically send data to scientists in the past, telling them how to shape the future. Perhaps this is why right now we only notice such subtle differences with our Mandela effects, and there's not kind of this whole butterfly effect that I mentioned earlier. So is CERN actually improving its technology in the past from the future? This sounds confusing, but there's a term for this. It's called retrocausality. Instead of a cause creating an effect creates a cause, and this phenomenon is actually supported by quantum theory.
Just on the topic of retrocausality, the Swiss as a whole, do you reckon they were sending information back in time to the Nazis? They knew when to evacuate Hitler before everything went fully off the rails with terms of the war efforts. So they could get to Argentina faster and then make sure they could continue all of their research.
It's pretty incredible that they managed to sneak them out of Germany to Argentina, like Mengele, and I can't remember who was there, but you know, yeah, they must have been sent to them from 2020.
Use the TARDIS, I think, to get out of there.
I mean, it's certainly a weird thought that CERN can manipulate time, but if they did find this particle, this could technically be the case. Maybe they'll use it for good, maybe for bad, but who knows? Maybe the God particle is actually allowing CERN to effectively play God. What do you guys think?
The biggest thing that I remember from the CERN experiments when the Hadron Collider was first built and they started firing particles around it was how many people were genuinely concerned that the world was going to end because they created a second Big Bang by crashing two particles into each other. That's going to wipe out life on Earth.
The thing is, it was Stephen Hawking who said it was possible, which is kind of why it made it even more believable. I mean, to be fair to Stephen Hawking, I think he said that there is like a 1 in 160 trillion chance, but you know, there's still a risk, and it's Stephen Hawking, the smartest guy we know, telling
surely
us
there's that chance of the world ending on any day. That's such a mad
I mean,
you wouldn't even mention it.
No, but still scary.
So I remember Callum as well absolutely shitting himself on that day.
I mean, the thing is, back then we were like 10. I was well scared about that.
And that's the question, would you press a button that's a 1 in 160 trillion chance of killing you instantly?
What's in it for me?
Nothing.
You could have a look at what the Big Bang looked like.
A little bit of scientific advancement.
Nah, I don't care about that.
There we go, there's reason to be slightly concerned.
Would you press a button that has a 1 in 100 chance of ending the world if a psychological PhD student would write a good article on conspiracy theorists?
Yes.
Well, there we go.
Then again, I'd be a bit disingenuous, though, because I would be incentivized to write it, given that we've doing this groundbreaking experiment pressing the button. But
it's like those experiments like shooting the cat or something like that.
What?
There's like those experiments where they lock a cat in the box and I think it might have been on Darren Brown.
Schrodinger's cat?
You press a button and if you press a button...
Oh, I know what you mean. You press a button and it kills the cat.
Yeah.
And for some reason, everyone presses it.
Yeah. They get nothing out of it.
They literally get nothing out of it. It's just the urge to press a button is too much. They all do it.
More of a curiosity. finest.
Yeah.
Cat
when the
didn't
women's crying her eyes out, I still presses it.
I hope when you've got such a small attention span, you can't keep yourself occupied in this room for however long. You've got to press that button.
Should we dip into our rating?
Yeah, we got a little bit off topic there. I suppose that's what the twist do for you, with you always trying to distract us from the matter at hand, which is the fact they might be trying to engineer
the antimatter at hand, actually.
It's a difficult one to almost wrap your head around, the idea of a multiple timelines theory in itself, thinking that every time a Mandela effect happens, something resets and you get transported to a different timeline where that thing has happened. I'm struggling to fully recount it myself now. But I will start off by saying it's a very interesting theory. And of course, anything to do with Switzerland and Luke gets an automatic little boost, just because it's an ongoing feud now, which has lasted multiple episodes and doesn't seem to be going away.
They have a one-sided feud, so the Swiss are going to reply.
Wait, they've been planning something. When we get our first Swiss listener, that's when things will start to really kick off. But for rating, I'll give it an 8.5 out of 10. It's something I've never really fully thought about. It's the fact that the Hadron Collider's sort of gone off the general radar of the public, even though they're probably still running experiments on it now. But you just see fear when they started running experiments with Stephen Hawking, of all people, saying there is a small chance that the world as we know could completely end because they've crashed two particles a bit too hard into each other.
There's actually a crazy amount of these particle colliders out there. I saw 30,000.
That does put things a little bit more perspective then. Why were people getting so up in arms about this one in Switzerland?
Well, it's a Mandela effect. People, like, I swear there was only one, and now all of a sudden, have they actually been sending it back in the past?
Sending it to all across the world just to make sure, right, we can't be the only one scapegoated here. You're making these Hadron Colliders. There's 29,999 other ones that are perfectly safe.
If you say to someone, have you heard of the Hadron Collider, I don't think anyone's ever gone, yeah, which one?
Yeah, I'll say for that matter, and also the satanic statue, which could have more of a meaning, and the fact they're trying to create dark portals that enter the underworld, which is poorly worded when you're trying to reassure public safety and keep people from panicking. I think the believability I'm going to go with is not going to be particularly high, just because at the end of the day, it's science. They're trying to advance our understanding of the world, because it would be such a groundbreaking finding to find out exactly what happened at the Big Bang, because so far, again, you can only really just speculate. Apart from that certain particles crashed into each other, expansion, etc., etc. Now we're here doing a conspiracy theory podcast in the middle of a second lockdown. That is a butterfly effect in itself. They had that one guy in China not eating the bat. Where would we be? Where'd the co-conspirators be? They wouldn't exist.
Very true. That is very true.
But my very round the houses view on the believability, I'm going for a 3 out of 10. I'm not sure I've justified it anyway. 3 out of 10.
I accept that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that as well. As Callum kind of said, any dig at the Swiss is going to knock this off a bit. But the fact that it was so high profile, and the potential risks of it were so high profile. I remember being on the radio, being on the TV. Obviously, Stephen Hawking has apparently said it. So I think fully conspiracy, I'm going to go for a 8.5 out of 10. Believability wise, I mean, I just got no clue of the science behind it and whether or not it could actually have caused time travel and stuff. I suspect not, but you never know. And I feel like they would use it. They would use the time travel, especially the Swiss, would use it a bit more maliciously than writing in books that Mandela died in the 80s. And they got better uses for time travel.
Changing the Monopoly's man monocle.
We're going to really fuck with people here. So, yeah, I think believability-wise, I'm struggling to give it very high. I do think the satanic statue is a bit odd, and I still don't know the reason behind it being there. And the fact that they would, you know, describe it as the underworld, and that they would even let out that there was a risk of something bad happening, you think they would keep it quiet. You know, whenever you hear of nuclear reactors, we're always told how safe they are, but with this, it was almost the opposite. They were almost putting it in your face, like, oh, well, there is a chance you could create a black hole, but we're going to do it anyway. So that was a bit odd, but I think believability-wise, I might go for 3.
All right, yeah, I'll take that. I think this theory was interesting. It's, you know, it's a mix of a few events. Like, it's a mix of the Hadron Collider. It's a mix of Mandela effect and, yeah, CERN itself as an entity, which is interesting. I do remember genuinely being really, really scared about this when it was happening, to the point where I remember everyone was like, you know, if the world's going to end, it will be at like 12:30. So I remember school put it on TV for us to watch at lunchtime, which, I mean, they never used to do. And I went and sat down with my lunch to see if the world was going to end or not. And I mean, what a relief when it wasn't. So yeah, just for the fascination. I think it's a fascinating theory. I'm going to score it an 8.5 out of 10. In terms of believability, it's not very believable. I struggle with the Mandela effect, to be honest, just because of butterfly effect, and just the fact it's such basic things, it seems a bit pointless, and they can often be put down to common misconceptions. Like, for example, I was a firm believer it was Luke, I am your father, but then I've never actually watched that scene, so it's just based on what everyone else has told me.
I think, yeah, that's my thoughts on the Mandela effect. I think it is literally just, I think it's odd that so many people can get something wrong. But if people are just told something happens and then it spreads, you can quite easily see how it would happen without having to make the leap that it's alternate dimensions. I think that's where the theory loses a lot of people, because it is quite a cool phenomenon that people can misremember something in such large numbers.
I suppose with the Luke, I am your father one as an example, it's such a minor difference though in terms of no, I am your father, or to Luke, I am your father. It's one word difference. Maybe not so much for a case of Mandela not being alive and died in the 80s. It's a bit more of a leap, but I'm certain, especially with the pop culture ones, like say Pikachu not having black on his tail, that's such a minor.
I think as well with that, it can so easily be different in different things. Like, you know, one toy of Pikachu might have black on his tail and stuff like that.
Chinese bootleg.
Yeah, it's not going to score very highly for me. The only thing I find a bit believable is it's a bit odd out of nowhere, you know, this particle exists that can travel faster than the speed of light, and then it kind of got shot down. But then I guess that's probably just a case of not validating the results and just getting a bit excited about a, you know, groundbreaking phenomenal discovery.
If you go the speed of light or above, you will travel forward in time relative to everyone else, but you can't go back. So it would give an explanation of people traveling forward in time, but we wouldn't notice that really until we got to that point.
We're living life 1 minute ahead of everyone else.
Yeah.
And what are you looking from that?
Yeah, I'm going to score it lower than you two, actually. I'm going to go for a 2 out of 10.
I understand you've got a conspiracy now first, John.
Yeah, you understand correctly. So mine is around the work of Tesla. And I don't mean the car company run by Elon Musk. I actually mean the person it's named after, Nikola Tesla. So Nikola Tesla was a Serbian-American inventor and engineer, best known for his contributions to the design of the modern alternating current electricity supply system. He's thought of as one of the great scientific minds. And as I mentioned, the car company Tesla is named after him as a tribute to his great work. So one of his kind of early inventions was a car that had an antenna on it that powered and charged its own batteries. When he showed this car to J.P. Morgan, the famed American banker, Morgan said, "If we can't put a meter on it, then we don't want it." In short, stating that the unlimited energy has no use to him if it can't be monetized. Dr. Puthoff, an energy researcher, said that such self-generating energy does exist, but if he were to bring them forward to the public, he and his family would be killed.
So it's safe to say that Tesla might have been a little bit put off by this doctor's verdict.
I was waiting for somebody to make some sort of pun on that name. It's an open goal, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, exactly. I had to.
Yeah, luckily your input didn't put me off. Nothing. So yeah, such technologies would prove fossil fuels, nuclear power, etc., completely redundant, and as a result, pose a serious threat to the businesses within these industries. It seems odd that despite the last 100 years of technological advancement, energy is still almost entirely reliant on burning of fuel to create steam to generate power. This method is clearly very wasteful, as much of the energy created is lost, and factories and cars are still largely powered in the exact same way as 100 years ago. Back when DC electricity, so like direct current, was being used, and dynamotors were creating the electrical energy, they used knife switches to apply the voltage to the circuits. When the switch was being closed, a huge potential was radiated into the air and created a huge unknown force capable of throwing something against a wall. Tesla wanted to know where this potential voltage, some hundreds to thousands of times greater than the original power source, was coming from. And he dedicated a lot of his life to kind of seeking out why and how could these events happen, and where is this huge extra energy source coming from, and what's the potential for it. Certain high-frequency electrical currents were observed by Tesla and Faraday, two of the most high-profile kind of scientific minds of the time, and many others, creating huge amounts of excess power, but they didn't understand where it came from. Tesla referred to this as the ocean of infinite energy, and Professor Dirac, another scientist, referred to it as the Dirac Sea. The modern term is the zero-point energy field. This is a model of a vacuum that models kind of particles as an infinite sea with negative energy. If you introduce a counter-rotating vortex of energy, not to go kind of too scientific on you guys, but try and stick with it.
I'm very focused right now, trying to follow every word.
In my zone.
Cool. Right, so if you introduce a counter-rotating vortex of energy to this, like, sea of particles, you create a phenomenon known as lift, or electromagnetic gravitics, which is sometimes referred to as anti-gravity, but this name isn't strictly accurate. These waves and energies are not anti-gravity, they just act as if they have no mass, so they aren't slowed down by any sort of air resistance. This would hypothetically allow something powered using such technology to accelerate at unimaginable speeds directly against gravity. So it kind of follows on that there's quite a lot of people that think this kind of technology and this kind of physics is what is used in, say, flying saucers and things like that, and that other aliens and stuff use it too, as well as it being possible on Earth.
I've definitely talked about anti-gravity engines for the old UFOs and Area 51 and the like.
Well, sticking with the Tesla link as well, Elon Musk has discussed it, and he says he thinks it's the future for space travel, because he agrees with this theory in of saying that it's ridiculous that we still have to burn things to provide a lot of energy, and that modern spaceships rely on just burning something and all the gas coming up the end of the spaceship powering it. He says it's ridiculous that we're still doing that. So I think he's quite keen on potentially harvesting this phenomenon. So Nikola Tesla noticed on his early AC circuit that there were times when he would input a certain amount of energy into the system and even more power would come out of it, as if creating this energy from thin air. He discovered that every strand of energy has an aspect to it that is a zero-point energy field. A zero-point energy field occurs when at a temperature of absolute zero, there is still some energy available, whereas previously it's thought that basically every particle or an atom is completely still at a temperature of absolute zero, so it has no energy. At even room temperature, these waves are so energy dense that one cubic centimeter could power the entire US for a day. He also discovered that these energy fields are everywhere, using the analogy that to power the entire world for a year would be like taking a thimbleful of water out of one of the Great Lakes.
And we haven't capitalized on this yet.
No, in essence, no. For a few reasons that I'll kind of touch on, but yeah, it seems like a pretty incredible prospect.
So like JP Morgan obviously kind of invented the whole investment banking thing. And I mean, in the times when he was like first setting up and, you know, establishing JP Morgan, if a guy came to him and said, look, I've got this thing that can produce so much electricity, he's definitely going to say no, because so much of his money and his business was probably relying on oil.
Well, yeah, exactly. And his whole thing, because Tesla's goal was for the entire world to have unlimited free energy, whereas JP Morgan comes at it from the other end. He just wants to kind of maximize his money wherever possible.
Yeah, I mean, even if you could replicate it now, I'm guessing there's so many like wealthy people, powerful people who would not want oil to become priceless. Basically, not priceless, but worthless.
Exactly. And that's exactly the point, to be honest. There are some logistical problems with this technology, but scientists, as well as even NASA, have been working on this technology for decades based on Tesla's findings, and many believe they've been successful. But there is genuine scope for this to eventually power the entire global population. The main problem with this technology isn't a scientific one, it's political. Free energy would require a huge shake-up of the economy and power industries, as highlighted with JP Morgan and Tesla. The interest of many wealthy people at the top isn't to make everyone else's lives easier and cheaper, but instead to line their own pockets. Over 1,000 new coal power plants are built every year, mostly in China and India. And India is estimated to cost trillions of dollars to become fully developed in terms of electrical technology using traditional means. Such methods cause mass pollution and are harmful to those living and working in and around the plants, as well as the local environment. Nuclear energy also poses serious threats when it goes wrong, as seen in Chernobyl and Fukushima.
Bit of a fuck up at Fukushima.
That is a lot worse than the put off one.
I'm here all day.
Can you imagine if like this just came out now and it turns out Tesla found out like over 100 years ago that we could do this, and government had just been hiding it from us, and you know, like sub-Saharan Africa is poor and living in poverty and fighting for survival just because of this.
I mean, exactly. It's a horrible thought.
If you think the Extinction Rebellion protests were an inconvenience your day, imagine that, but on a scale we've never seen before, there'll be riots across the world.
Just one of the things, what the fuck would you do if that just came out?
I don't even know. I'm so disillusioned with the world anyway. The latest in a long list of blows. Okay, so clearly this unlimited, cleaner electrical energy would be a far more beneficial system, but none of the current billionaires and businesses want to do it. Partly out of fear of change and greed, but also because no one wants to be the first to fund such a supposedly radical idea. They would all rather be first to be second, to use a quote from an investment banker. So basically saying no one wants to be the first one, but if it works, they all want to be the second one. So to conclude, it seems highly likely that Tesla actually did find a method of creating unlimited energy, but was shut down by investors at the time as it didn't particularly benefit them financially. 100 years on, the situation remains very much the same, but perhaps one day someone will pluck up the courage to give unlimited energy a try. What do you think, guys?
If you want to come at it from maybe a little bit more of an altruistic point of view, from maybe giving the JP Morgans and their cronies a little bit of, I'll say, credit, it's quite loose. You think there'll be a lot of people who could lose their jobs if the coal, oil, or the fossil fuels industry was to just be rendered obsolete? Because it's not like you just transfer all of these people into this new free energy.
Yeah, it'd be a massive shake-up of literally the world, wouldn't it? If you just had to switch completely your energy source. It's like what we're trying to do now, I guess, but like escalate.
I think that is a fair point. I think the counter to it would be that this technology's been around over 100 years, supposedly. So you could have done it gradually in that time.
I guess the thing with that as well is, like, I mean, I know Tesla was an incredible scientist and well ahead of his time, but not like, you know, your standard, very advanced physicist today not easily come up with this, given what we know.
Well, the thing is, I don't know that they'd be looking into it, because he discovered alternating currents and things like that, and it was kind of off the basis of that discovery that he found this one. Further to it, he thought by using that current and by using these zero energy fields, you could actually transfer all the energy along existing power lines, and you could power the world that way. So by the sounds of it, the infrastructure needed might not actually be too difficult to set up. It's just getting everybody to switch over.
Yeah, I suppose. But even so, it would take, a substantial amount of time probably to switch everything over to the new format and to set up the infrastructure required to produce this zero gravity energy field.
Well, I mean, yeah, in the very least of your problem, I suppose you can see why Tesla's called Tesla, because if this did happen, every car would have to be electric.
Yeah, exactly. That's maybe a conspiracy in itself there. Maybe Elon does have the answers.
Yeah,
he's just waiting for his time to strike.
So yeah, I don't know. I don't really know how you want to rate it, because I mean, this is all documented in Tesla's scientific journals and stuff that he made these discoveries. I suppose you can still rate it on whether you believe, you know, how possible it is that you could create this unlimited free energy, and how likely you think it is that it was covered up, I suppose, in terms of believability.
Yeah, that was my exact thoughts for believability. So for twofold, well, I might do a little average of the two stories. But overall, as a theory, I think it's really interesting. Just it's almost like the beginnings of a big conspiracy. Because if that ended, this was then to come out, we were to say 20, 30 years down the line, have this big revelation, and then people were to look back and see, oh, this has been around for a lot longer, why wasn't it implemented sooner? Then you'd have a real conspiracy on your hands.
If we're still going by then, we'll cover it.
Exactly, yeah. Let's hope we will be the size of Joe Rogan in 30 years' time. We have an exclusive deal.
We'll have our own streaming service. We get that.
Yeah, powered by antimatter energy. I thought it was a really interesting one. Short and sweet, but it's got straight down to the point. And it does have a lot of the hallmarks of a good conspiracy, given it's the global elites of the banking world looking to further their own interests at the expense, perhaps, of the wider population. So for that reason, I'll give it an 8 out of 10. And as for my believability, I'm going to start with the easier one, the likelihood that these banks would have covered it up, and that gets a solid 9 out of 10 for me. I think when there's money to be made, the morality does go out the window, especially when you're dealing with such vast quantities.
Just have to look at the news last week, the papers that were released, HSBC, like, funding some dodgy scheme, you know, money laundering in London, all over the place, like billions and billions and billions of pounds. And they just don't care. They're just happy to do it.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Several billions of pounds filtered through this one tiny office at the top of a block of flat. Bonkers. But if they can get away with it, I think they've seen there's no reason why they shouldn't do it, just until they get caught. But by then, they probably cashed out and they're, you know, on a private island somewhere. But back to the other believability, which is a little bit trickier to work out. Does this technology exist? Because there's no doubting that Tesla was a genius. He was arguably way ahead of his time with some of his discoveries that even physicists today might not fully understand. So I think there's definitely scope for this to be a genuine thing down the line if we were to continue advancing at the rate we are scientifically. But I think I'm going to go for a cautiously optimistic 4 out of 10 on the believability that this could genuinely become a power source. Combine the two, you get a 7 out of 10 on the believability. Actually, it's not 7 out of 10. I thought I gave myself 10. Wait, 6.5 out of 10 on the believability overall. So quite a good one there.
That is pretty solid, yeah. Luke, what do you reckon?
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. I think it's been a nice mix of conspiracies. This episode is really interesting when you go into a lot of detail, because, I mean, when you've got that much detail and all these fancy scientific terms I don't understand, it kind of adds to the believability in a way. And, I mean, if Tesla's documented all of this, then that's also incredible that this thing has existed for, like, over 100 years and it's just been totally ignored because of the greediness of the financial sector. So overall, it's a conspiracy. I'm going to give it an 8.5 out of 10. In terms of believability, I'm not definitely not the biggest fan of the financial sector like Callum. JP Morgan, you know, might have been considered one of the kind of forefathers of American economy today, in the sense that he set up the whole investment banking system, and that in turn has made America global powerhouse it is. But, you know, he was money driven. America's quite money driven, and he'd have turned down kind of any offers that came his way if he thought it would affect the amount of money he's going to get. And without doubt, if Nikola Tesla came to him with this, it would definitely kind of screw up all his investments. So he would have turned it down and tried to get it shut down, which he probably could because of all the power and money he had. So going to give that side of the story quite high as well, but not as high as Calum, 7 out of 10. In terms of Tesla having this technology ready and available, I think it's interesting. When you first said it, I kind of questioned, like, yeah, why not? Why can't we have, like, energy that just kind of keeps producing itself? Like, I mean, I'm no physicist, but it seems plausible to me that it could just cycle. So yeah, and if Tesla has found that, I might give it a go myself and see what I can come up with. But I'm gonna score that a 4 out of 10. So taking the average of that, a 5.5 out of 10.
Not too bad. See, I could give my thoughts. I think as an overall theory, just the idea that we could have unlimited energy and solve a hell of a lot of worldwide problems, and that we've had this technology potentially for just over 100 years, and it was covered up purely for money purposes, I think is a pretty mental conspiracy. So I'm going to go for a 9 out of 10, I think. Maybe a bit biased, but I think I'm going to go for a 9. And then believability-wise, I absolutely believe that Tesla kind of made this discovery himself. I think he did it on like a small scale. So I think I don't know how the logistics behind scaling up, particularly how they would work. So I don't know that specific technology is available at the moment, but I think certainly smaller scale stuff did happen and that it is possible in the future. So I think believability on that front, probably a 7, I think. It seems pretty clear to me that Tesla did find this out, and it kind of blew his mind along with everyone else's, but it's very hard to judge, especially coming from a non-physics point of view. It's very hard to judge logistically how realistic it is. And then in terms of it being covered up, I think, yeah, as much as the only real proof would be almost circumstantial that it would make sense for them to cover it up, and obviously the quotes from JP Morgan, but I think even despite that, you certainly wouldn't rule it out. You certainly wouldn't put it past the banking industry to cover up something like that purely for their own gain. So I think I'll go for a 6 on that, so an average of a 6.5 for me, I think.
That's quite a different spread of how we rated both the believabilities, but you all seem to end up with the same ballpark overall believability, but we had different approaches to how we actually got there. It's quite interesting.
Yeah. Right, am I handing over now for a game of conspiracy?
All right, yep. Thanks for that, John. So, as you said, it's time for our popular game, Conspiracy. And for anyone new to the podcast, Conspiracy is a game where I present to my co-host 3 conspiracies, 2 of which are real conspiracies that I found somewhere on the internet, and 1 I've made up myself. So without further ado, let's jump into the conspiracies. My first conspiracy for you, Charles Darwin destroyed his evidence of evolution because he ate all of it.
What?
My second conspiracy, Ukraine Airlines Flight 752, which was shot down by Iran this year, was actually shot down by China as people on board knew about coronavirus. And my final theory for you, Pluto was downgraded from its planet status as astronomers believe it embarrassed the profession that they all missed it and a 23-year-old beginner found it.
Wow.
That's quite a good one, yeah.
3 quite good ones. I know Luke's really good with the conspiracy game. It's always a tough challenge to pick out the conspiracy, so it's really interesting to dig in. Have you got any bit more information on each of them just to get us going?
Sure, yeah. So in terms of Charles Darwin, on his way back from the Galapagos Islands, Darwin bought turtles from different islands that were different because they were kind of isolated to their islands and they had evolved as such. However, he actually ate them on the way back because apparently turtles are so incredibly delicious. So ate his evidence and proof of evolution.
Oh, right. When you said ate his evidence, I thought...
I mean, it's a long journey back from the Galapagos Islands to the UK. He might have got hungry and ate had to eat paper, you never know.
So are you saying, what are the ramifications of this? Are you saying he still went on to write all his stuff? Or are you saying he gave up after that point?
No, he still went on to write all of his stuff, but just... But it was solid piece useful. Of evidence was destroyed by his stomach.
So he just set himself back a few years. By every tortoise, wherever they are.
In terms of the Ukraine Airlines Flight 752 that was shot down by China, not Iran, supposedly victims aboard the flight were linked to the National Microbiology Lab in Canada. Now, this lab supposedly received coronavirus samples from China in 2017. And then there was actually a huge security breach at the lab in 2019 with Chinese nationals shipping samples from Canada to China. And apparently some people on board the plane had found out about this breach and, you know, were getting close to reporting China for it. In terms of Pluto, there's not really too much to it that's not kind of in the title, but essentially, you know, people had ideas that this planet existed just based on kind of how other planets in the area operated. And then kind of a lot of people were out there looking for it. And then it was actually this 23-year-old beginner that found it. And you can imagine, like, astronomers who had been searching years and years for it were not too happy about it and tried to, you know, say it's not a planet, it's a dwarf planet.
You wouldn't perhaps know on the top of the head, from the time point at which it was actually found, how long did it take to get downgraded?
That's what I'm thinking. I suppose ages.
Yeah, it was.
It only got downgraded about 10 years ago, and now isn't it back as a planet or something?
It was a long period of time. It was like 20, 30 years.
That's a long grudge.
Are you telling me Pluto was only found in the 80s? I could have sworn it got downgraded in about 2010.
Let me have a look.
I might be chatting shit, to be fair.
Maybe. Oh yeah, no. Yeah, Pluto was discovered in the 30s, yeah.
But it was only downgraded around 10-15 years ago.
Yeah, it was only downgraded 10-15 years ago, but I think the debate has always been there.
So they let him have his limelight for 85 years and like, nah, you've had enough credit now, mate.
Yeah, they waited.
Even though he would have been probably dead if he was 23.
Yeah, if he was 23, definitely the people or the older physicists would be all conspiring against him. They'd be have popped their clogs long ago.
That's a difficulty with conspiracy, though, because I think we've already established that conspiracy is an absolute load of rubbish, but that isn't what we're trying to guess. Luke's made it up or not.
We do this every time, though. This is interesting to entertain the theories as theories.
Yeah. I'm going to let Callum go first. I'm stuck here.
That's a good tactic, isn't it? Have I really taken a stab? Wait, so I think the Darwin one, it seems quite plausible as the fact that, yes, he could have eaten his research, but a conspiracy from, back in the 1800s, or could have survived this long. But it's one of those ones, when I first heard it, I think that is so ridiculous, it's got to be a red herring, so that could actually be a genuine conspiracy. So currently I'm ruling that one out. As with the next two, again, they're both quite difficult, given that, yes, coronavirus is hot in the news, yes, it's gripping the world, it's a massive pandemic, yada yada, and conspiracy theories are actually going to be running rife. But then is it almost too much of a current event to make up a conspiracy theory, again, being another red herring? And this final one, say, we've established, is almost completely ridiculous when you think about it logically in principle, unless it is a bit of long, immense effort to... Yeah. Unless it's been an immense effort to finally achieve some vindication from beyond the grave for just us jumped up little physicist who thinks he knows his stuff. If I got smart enough, I was like, nope, get back in your box. It's just a dwarf planet, you moron. So, with that being said, I'm going to... I'm not sure if I'm calling this playing safe, but I do think that for China to have shot down an Iranian airline, I'm not quite sure if the global politics between China and Iran specifically, but the idea that China supposedly stole back coronavirus samples, or the security breach at the Chinese lab they originally donated samples to, is fishy, so much so it could have been made up. I'm going to say that the Chinese shooting down a plane containing potentially their own citizens on it is the conspiracy.
John?
My logic is very, very similar, because I think the first one is, it's just so ridiculous, especially the tagline of Darwin ruined his evolution theory by eating it. I think you'd be a brave man to make that one up for this game. So even though it became slightly more plausible when you explained it. And then, I think the coronavirus one, just because it's so topical, it's either a bit of a tell or it's a very good bluff. And then the Pluto one, again, definitely between the last two. I think the Pluto one, I could see you making that one up because it is so ridiculous. I don't know if anyone would have the nerve to post it online. But I think I'm going to be boring and agree with Callum. So Luke's either going to get a clean sweep or it's going to be a win for the old players.
Right. I suppose it's a while. It's a while since we. It's a while. It's been a few episodes since we both categorically agreed on something in contrast.
It has been, yeah.
So you've both gone for the Ukraine Airlines flight, but you think it's between that and Pluto?
Oh no! Don't tell me what that means.
Well, I can confirm for you that it is between one of those two. Darwin is. It's actually quite widely regarded as fact, but not totally fact, that Darwin did actually eat all the tortoises on his way back from the Galapagos Islands because they were so tasty. See that they ate them all.
Yeah, I didn't want to say this because I always say this and it always bites me on the ass, but I did feel like I'd heard that somewhere.
That's
that they were really tasty and they ate them.
That's from QI, so I don't know if you watch QI.
Part of the Kirkus British drinking game. John's saying, I've definitely heard this from before. Cut out.
Yeah, I can confirm. It's a clean sweep for conspiracy.
Oh, congratulations. That is a rarity.
That weird China one is out there somewhere. Yeah, I made it the Pluto one. I messed my years up. I was a bit tired today when I was thinking that one up, clearly. But yeah.
It worked. Brilliant triple bluff.
Yeah, yeah.
So conspiracy is becoming a game of high-stakes poker now, the amount of bluffing that has to go on, with concocting really wacky theories to try and throw the other hosts off.
Pressure's on the next first round.
Well,
if you
just make up a wacky one, then everyone's like, oh, it's too ridiculous to...
Yeah.
Not for you to make up, so, you know. But yeah, that's it for today's episode. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And yeah, keep challenging the status quo.
See you later.
Auf Wiedersehen.